Good morning. Or actually, I should say, I guess, good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is T.R. Reid. Mr. Reid has become one of the nation's best-known correspondents through his coverage of global affairs for the Washington Post and books and documentary films, including commentaries for National Public Radio. He's with us today because he's also written and reported extensively on healthcare in the United States and around the world. He's written the New York Times bestseller, The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. And recently, PBS has played a documentary he was involved in called Sick Around the World. It is a great pleasure for us to have him with us today. And I want to remind everybody that shortly, Thursday, this March 22nd, he's going to be at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium, where he's going to present a lecture entitled on the Obama Healthcare Plan. And I failed to mention the right name for your documentary that was on recently. I apologize, Mr. Reid. It was
US. That was the former documentary you were talking about. Yeah,
U.S. Healthcare, the Good News.
Yes, right.
And the lecture will be on the Obama Healthcare in plain English is the title of that. So we look forward to having you there. And thanks very much for joining us today, by the way.
Thanks, Dr. Woodard. Great to be here. Thanks.
Let's start by trying to frame this issue, and I guess the way I would do that is, why do we need this national debate, I'm going to call it, on health care anyway?
Well, the reason is Americans are paying more than anybody else in the world for health care and getting a lot less than the other countries like us. The thing is, all the other countries like us, and I mean, you know, advanced, high-tech, free market democracies, capitalist democracies, all of them provide health care for everybody. On average, they spend about half as much per capita as we do to provide it. We leave 49.9 million people without health insurance and still pay more, even though that we're getting less. So if you worry about that, I mean, you know, we Americans are so used to being number one, and we do lead the world in so many areas. So it's funny that in this important area of human endeavor, healthcare, we're a third-rate power.
It seems to me that from recent interviews, we're also maybe losing ground. Not only are we not providing necessarily some of the best healthcare as it's measured, that we may be continually slipping, at least from when things were started to be looked at more closely in this regard in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, well, relative to 50 years ago, we've definitely slipped because the other countries have built better healthcare systems and cover everybody. You know, some people in America, Doctor, you know this, get the finest care in the world and the finest facilities. Believe me, I've been to hospitals all over the world. I wrote a book about it. And America has the most beautiful and the most user-friendly hospitals. If you've got the money or if you've got the insurance, you're probably going to get pretty darn good care in the USA. The problem is the 50 million people without insurance who really don't get in the door until they're sick enough to go to the emergency room, and then we kind of treat them haphazardly. And we treat them fine, but it's the most expensive way. So other countries have caught us and passed us in coverage and quality because they cover everybody.
It's kind of surprising to hear, but it is my understanding and kind of doing the research that we're really the only industrialized country that really, for the most part, is not covering all of its citizens.
Yeah, that's right. All the other countries, like us, rich industrialized democracies, Western Europe, Canada, Taiwan, Korea, South Korea, Japan, they cover everybody. And there's an organization in New York, the Commonwealth Fund, that I respect a lot, and they do comparative studies on the quality of health care in different countries. They issue these national report cards, and what they do is they compare health care in the U.S. to health care in 22 other rich countries. And there are some areas where we're the best. Recovery rates from a diagnosis of breast cancer, we're number one in the world. Recovery from a diagnosis of prostate cancer, we're number two in the world. But the striking thing is, for lots of chronic diseases, diabetes, arthritis, heart disease, many cancers, we rate right near the bottom of those 23 countries. And get this, this is the one that really bugs me. There's this measure called neonatal mortality, and that's basically a measure of can you keep a baby alive until her first birthday. And of the 23 richest countries in the world, the U.S. rates 23rd in keeping babies alive to their first birthday. Now, that's really tragic to me. We know how to keep those babies alive. It's just that the moms and children can't get the care. They don't have access to care.
I've discussed these issues with other physicians even at times, and the argument always seems to be, well, we're not, there are so many other factors involved in these ratings that it may not all be related to healthcare per se.
Well, certainly if you look at population health, there's a lot that goes on there other than a good doctor and a good hospital. There's diet, there's wealth, there's the safety of the society and all that. But I'm talking about measures where somebody is diagnosed with a disease and then the healthcare system kicks in and does its best to save it. Now, the Commonwealth Fund in New York has this study, has this measure. You know, let's see if I can remember it. It is mortality from conditions amenable to treatment. And I think what that means in English is if you have a disease that could be cured but you die, then that's a bad thing. And in those terms, the U.S. ranks 20th out of the 23 richest countries in curing people of diseases that could be cured. And again, I say it's not because we don't know how to do it. We have fabulous doctors and fabulous hospitals. It's just that so many people don't have access to the great parts of our system. Mm-hmm. And in, you know, Germany, Austria, Japan, Taiwan, everybody has access to care.
How did we get here? If in the 50s, shortly after the war, we were ranked very highly up in the top, insurance began to be available to people. I remember it often started out with zero or very low deductible, and Medicare came online. What's happened that we have sunk in international ratings, and others have floated above us?
Here's what I think happened. The other countries, I go through this in my book, and many of them did this after, made a decision that they were going to provide health care for everybody. It's a moral commitment. You say to yourself, doggone it, we're a rich country. We are not going to let people who are sick stay home in pain because they can't afford a doctor. And over time, it took into the 90s for Taiwan and Switzerland. All the other rich democracies got there. They cover everybody. The U.S. has never made that commitment, and to me, that's the most important distinction. You have to make, if you make the moral commitment and say, doggone it, I think everybody in my town who's sick should have access to a doctor, rich or poor, well, then you can design a system that gets there. But we've never really taken on that question. And so we have a system, as you know, that nobody designed. I mean, nobody would have designed our crazy quilt system with 50, 60 different payers. Any hospital in Alaska is going to have 500, 600 different forms and dozens of people filling them out. It's just so complicated. I don't know, doctor, do you ever think of France as a model of management efficiency?
No.
Well, according to this well-known study by McKinsey and Company, the consulting firm, if our healthcare system were as efficient as France, if we had the administrative costs of the French healthcare system, we could save $600 billion a year. That would cover all the uninsured. But we're not efficient. We have one system for veterans. We have one system for, I'm a veteran, we have one system for active duty. We have one system for people with this kind of insurance, one system for people with that kind of insurance. I don't know about Alaska, but in my state, I live in Colorado, we have one health care system for people under 16 whose families that are 140% of poverty. We have a whole nother system for people at 180% of poverty, and we have another system after that for people over there. All complicated, all different rules, all different forms. We just waste so much money on stuff that doesn't provide anybody health care. And nobody designed it this way. Each new plan just came up in response to some individual problem. And we've never really sat down and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to provide health care for everybody. If we would make that commitment, I think we could get there.
Let me take just a short second to remind our listeners you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. My guest today is T.R. Reid. We're discussing health care in the United States and around the world with someone who's reported and written on this extensively. If you've got questions or comments, here's how you can get to us today. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Toll free 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. So if you want to address some questions to Mr. Reid, this is the time to do it. You got about 45 minutes with which we can try to address your concerns or questions. As we talked briefly before we came on the air, there's a couple of issues. A lot of people don't realize what you've been saying, and in addition, is true. And then the other thing is that there's a lot of fear about change. And when addressing that fear, we often hear this issue that we're going to have socialized health care. How many of the other countries in the world that are better than us are socialized medicine?
Some of them are. You got to define socialized medicine.
Right.
This is interesting. I give speeches around the country, and here's the thing: Americans really can't define socialized medicine. We know it's bad, right? We just don't know what it means.
We think it's bad. We don't know what it means.
But I would say you take a system like the one in Britain, and that's been copied in Spain and Italy and Scandinavia. In that system, the government owns the hospitals. The docs in the hospitals work for the government. The government pays all the bills. The government pays for almost all prescriptions. About 85% of the pills are paid for by the government. And you don't get a doctor bill in that system. You pay in taxes, and the taxes are high, but you net out without having to pay an insurance premium or deductible. You pay less overall. That's socialized medicine to me. And those systems work pretty well. But get this. In a lot of countries, Central Europe, let's see, Germany, Belgium, Switzerland, Netherlands, Japan, they cover everybody with private docs, private hospitals, and private insurance. In fact, I argue in my book that those countries, Germany, is less socialized than the U.S. because, you know, in America, when people turn 65, just about everybody goes on government insurance, Medicare. Germany doesn't have Medicare. People stay with the private insurer cradle to grave. So it's the opposite of socialized medicine. It's more private than what we've got, and yet they cover everybody. In Germany, they cover 82 million Germans, about 10 million illegal aliens. They're all covered, and very good care, and they spend about 60% as much per person as we do. So no, it does not have to be all socialized medicine. There are a lot of countries doing everything in the private sector and covering everybody.
So what's the argument then that people have who are afraid of, let's put quotes around socialized medicine since we have trouble defining it, as compared to what we're doing here?
Well, the interesting thing is, although we hate socialized medicine, right, when Americans get government-run medicine, they really like it. You know, I'm a veteran. I used to live in Britain. I went to the Royal Free Hospital. It was a government-run hospital, government doctors, government nurses, government lab technician, and no bill. Well, I now go to the VA hospital on 9th Street in Denver, government hospital, government doctors, government nurses, no bill. That's socialized medicine. And if it's so bad, why do we provide it for our military veterans? I don't get that. So, Medicare is private doctors and hospitals, but Medicare is a government-run insurance system, and Americans love it. Don't try to take Medicare away from our seniors. They go crazy. The same people who despise socialized medicine want to be sure that they keep getting that Medicare. So, why is that? We've learned in school that the private sector can do anything better than government, and in many areas of life, that's absolutely true. But it hasn't turned out to be true in healthcare. In healthcare, the VA and Medicare are much more popular with their users than are the private insurance companies.
That was a question that I really had that is almost heretical, and that is, can we continue to assume that a private, for-profit healthcare system can deliver healthcare costs reductions and quality as well as a non-for-profit system? You know, the issue is, does everything in a democracy and a free market like ours really work better in a for-profit model?
Yeah, no, that's an important question. So there are two different concerns there, Doctor. One is whether government should run it or the private sector, and two, if the private sector is running it, should it be for-profit? So I'll tell you what I found when I went around the world. As I said, some countries just have socialized medicine. The government does it, and those systems work okay. We lived in Britain. My family used the National Health Service, the free service, and it was fine. It was just like going to the doctor in America. But there are a lot of countries that have private docs and private insurance, and most of those have decided, let's see if you can see this distinction, it's okay for the provider, that is the doctor, the hospital, the lab, the drug company, it's okay if they're making a profit. But all the countries have decided that the payment system, the insurance system, has to be nonprofit. And here's why. They think the U.S. is the only country that lets insurance, health insurance companies make a profit on the basic coverage. And here's why. They just think there's a basic conflict between paying people's medical bills and paying your investors a dividend every quarter. If your goal, and their corporations, they have to do it, if your goal is to pay a dividend, then you invent all the devices that our insurance companies invented to avoid paying bills. You know, the no pre-existing condition, if you are ever sick, we won't cover you. They have, our health insurance industry has 100,000 adjusters whose job is to find ways to deny claims. They cut you off after your bill reaches a certain level during the year. That's not allowed in any other country, but the insurance companies there don't do it because they're basically charities. They're nonprofit. So I think that's the distinction I saw in the other countries. Doctors, hospitals want to make a profit, that's fine. But the insurance system in all the other countries, they said it has to be nonprofit because they don't want their companies acting as our insurance companies do.
Mm-hmm. All right, TR, we have a caller. I want to take her call, and let's see what she has to ask us. Carolyn, you're on line one.
Yes, this is Caroline. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I wanted to mention a teeny bit of history and then bring up a couple of things that that your guest has mentioned. As I remember it, well, I couldn't remember it. I'm too not old enough, but the story that I heard was when Truman, after World War II, that he tried to get instituted in the United States government-sponsored health care, and that the AMA fought him to a draw, and he said, well, if we can't do it here, we will do it in Japan and Germany, the two countries defeated in World War II. So that was the impetus for them being able to get the structures that they have, and of course, these are divergent structures. But so many things, like the VA, was able to bargain with or negotiate with the pharmaceuticals and got medications much cheaper for the VA than anyone else pays in this country. And even yet, I understand the federal government has made some rumblings about cutting VA benefits. So what's there today may not be there tomorrow. And then the final thing I will mention is that many years ago, I decided that if there had been buggy whip lobbyists, we'd all be driving buggies, not cars.
So
find this to be really a national defense issue. We can't keep spending the percentage of our national resources in such a manner, and it makes absolutely no sense to me from the standpoint of national defense. So those are my comments.
All right.
Okay. So here's what I have to say. I'd say I think your comment about when the government negotiates with the drug companies, it gets better prices. That's absolutely true. We have two, the government buys drugs in two big programs. One is the VA and one is Medicare Part D. That's where the government and insurance companies provide drugs at a reasonable price for seniors. But when they passed Medicare Part D, Congress put in a rule there that said the government can't negotiate for lower prices with the drug companies, which is, you know, it's the biggest buyer of drugs in the country, but they can't negotiate for lower prices. Whereas the VA does negotiate and pays on average about 40% less for the same drugs as Medicare programs do. So you're right about that. Now, on this business about, it's true that Harry Truman tried to get universal coverage, and it's, you're right that the American Medical Association fought it and called it socialized medicine. But that doesn't explain Germany and Japan. As a matter of fact, Germany was the first country in the world to provide health care for everybody, and their system was instituted in 1883. And it's not a government-run system, as I said. It's a private system with private insurance. Japan, after World War II, they rebuilt their whole country, and one of the things they did was they looked around the world to see what worked for, you know, for schools, for businesses, for courts. They just changed everything in their country, and they copied their healthcare system from Germany. That looked like the best one they could find. So that's why they used that German system. But no, it wasn't Truman who did that. So that part is not right. Yeah, the things you said, Carolyn, I think you got it right.
Well, the thing I thought was the influence that we, as an occupying country after World War II, may have had some influence there. I'm happy to be wrong in that one. One other thing that you mentioned, insurance companies being nonprofit. I remember that insurance companies, Blue Cross Blue Shield, was nonprofit a number of years ago, and they've certainly changed. In fact, within the last 10 years, I remember being incensed when I heard that the head of Blue Cross Blue Shield out of Washington had, in addition to his salary, been given a bonus of $105 million. And I'm going, holy cats, you know, that is obviously not nonprofit. So things have morphed into nothing but grab as much as you can and squeeze the consumer beyond reason. So thank you very much for coming and your comments and tackling this issue.
Thanks, Carolyn. Yeah, I think Carolyn's on to a really important point there. Blue Cross and Blue Shield started basically during the Depression just so that doctors and hospitals could get paid. And, you know, it was the kind of thing where a guy went around to every house and collected a nickel a week for the health insurance payment. And in the 70s and 80s, big private insurance companies started buying up the state Blue Crosses and Blue Shields and turning them to for-profit. And if you look at any history of American healthcare, that's, I'm not sure that's the only reason, but around that time, the 70s and 80s, is when things started to go sour. In 1970, we were spending about 5% of GDP on healthcare, and today we're spending 18%. In 1970, most people in the community could get some kind of care, either charity or they could pay for it. It was much cheaper then. Now, as I say, 49.9 million Americans don't have insurance, and for a lot of those people, you know, if they live in a big city, there may be a charity clinic, but a lot of those people, really, until they're sick enough to go to the emergency room, they don't get medical care.
You know, when I look, I wonder about, and I'm not opposed to insurance, but one day I looked up the word insurance, and as a general rule, insurance is something that we buy when we can't afford to lose something, like our house, a car, or something. But when insurance started in this country, at least as far back as I can remember, we had $0 deductible. I mean, we were not insuring for something that we could lose. To me, insurance would be catastrophic health insurance. So I'm wondering if even insurance is the right name for what we're using now to call insurance in this country.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because health insurance is kind of a different product. It for one thing, it covers predictable things. We know eventually people are going to get old and get sick. We know kids are going to need a measles shot or something. But the problem the reason it's got to be different is because healthcare is so expensive. You know, I mean, you buy health insurance. I mean, you buy auto insurance in case your car gets smashed and you can get it fixed. But you know what? That would have been a $3,000 or $4,000 bill. It's a serious bill, but people could come up with it. You know, if the car smashes into you, you're looking at $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 in doctor bills, and
right.
Nobody can pay that. Nobody can save up that kind of money, and that's why you need insurance. And nowadays, frankly, even a fairly routine visit to a doctor takes too much out of a person's take-home pay to cover. That's why people need health insurance. It's just a much more expensive risk that you have to insure against.
Right. I guess, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but my point to flesh out further is that maybe the reason health care is so expensive now is because of how we first started insurance. If we had started with very large deductibles, and that's kind of what's happening now in this country. Our health care expenditures are slowly decreasing. Our costs are staying up as more and more people are responsible for a lot of the upfront costs. So it is beginning, maybe that's part of what's moderating health care expenditures now in this country. So that's my point, I guess. We did it wrong when we started. Maybe I wasn't clear enough.
Yeah, I hear that, but you know what, doctor? I don't buy it.
Okay.
So there's an argument. You know, this argument is called the moral hazard. If you make something free, people will use a lot of it. And therefore, by, you know, having health insurance pick up almost everything except a $20 copay, people are encouraged to go to the doctor and we use too much health care and things like that. I don't accept it for this reason. In the first place, even with a high deductible, the costly part of medicine is not the $150 office visit. It's the $15,000 hospital stay or the $150,000 hospital stay. And you could raise the deductible to $1,000. It wouldn't make too much of a dent there. But secondly, you know, if I had golf insurance, you know, if somebody, you know, if an insurance company paid my greens fees, I'd probably pay a lot more golf than I do now. But if somebody's going to pay the copay for me to go to a proctologist, I don't think I'm going to rush in there and do it, even though it's free. You know, it's just not generally, you know, you go to the doctor when you need to. It's not that pleasant a part of life. I'm not criticizing doctors, but I don't buy the moral hazard argument, although you hear it a lot. And people say, you know, if we just made people better consumers, if we made you figure out the cost and find the cheapest doctor, I don't buy it. Another problem with being a good consumer is, kind of gets me, is you go into your doctor and your doctor says, oh my gosh, you've got Fleischmann syndrome and I've got to immediately put you on 400 milligrams of tetrachlorothetrazine or something. And I'm supposed to say to him, oh, gee, well, that's pretty expensive. Don't you think chlorothetrazine would work just as well? I can't do that. I don't have the information to be a good consumer. So I'm kind of wary when I hear what we really need to do is train Americans to be better consumers of medicine. And certainly, you know, if you have a heart attack or if you're hit by a truck, nobody lies in the ambulance and negotiates the fee for treating them. You can't do that. So I'm a little wary of those suggestions that if we just charge more and put more into the patient's hands, we'd do better. I'm not sure that would work.
Okay. Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. We're going to have to take a short break here. In Anchorage, you can reach us at 550-8433. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this very short break, we'll continue to take calls and emails as we discuss health care with NPR reporter, correspondent T.R. Reid. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1 Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is T.R. Reid. He's one of the nation's best-known reporters, and he's also going to be discussing or actually lecturing on the Affordable Health Care Act in plain English this Thursday night, March 22nd, at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium here in Anchorage. That program is from 7 o'clock on, and before the program, there's a meet and greet, which is at 6 to 7 p.m., sponsored by the Alaska Rural Affairs Councils and APRN Speaker Series. Both have a small fee, and both need a reservation. You can make these reservations at alaskapublic.org or KSKA. Mr. Reid, welcome back.
Thanks, Doctor.
Here is an email that has come in. You spurred some interest in the German system. It says, the writer says, it sounds great. How does it work? How is it different? And do the doctors make much less?
Yeah, good questions. You know what? For most Americans, the German system is not foreign at all. And what happens in the German system is you buy insurance from a private company. Private insurance company, you split the cost of the premium with your employer, and then you go to the doctor or hospital, you pay a very small copay. It's about $14 in Germany for anything, and the insurance picks up the bill for the rest, and you're splitting the cost with the employer. So that sounds pretty familiar. This is called the Bismarck model of healthcare. It was designed by the first German chancellor, Otto von Bismarck. And about 150 million Americans are on that system. Now, since it's like ours, why do I say it works better? Well, for one thing, everybody's covered. The insurance companies cover everybody. They can't turn you down. And get this, if you don't like your insurance company in Germany, they have about 220 companies. Anybody in Germany can buy any of the plans. If you don't like your insurance company, you can drop it on 60 days' notice. The next guy has to cover you, and he can't raise your rates. Now, nobody in America has that deal. You know, nobody has that kind of freedom of choice. And then the insurance companies, I don't know if anybody listening maybe has ever had a claim denied by a health insurance company. I bet you've seen this, Dr. Woodard. In Germany, they can't deny a claim. If a doctor or a chiropractor or a hospital submits the claim, they have to pay. And get this. They have to pay your claim within about 3 days. So what they've done is they've taken a system that we know, private insurance, where you split the cost with your employer, and they've just improved it mainly through regulations. They've imposed these rules on the insurance company, cover everybody, pay every bill. They don't have, you know, this business in America where you have an in-network doctor and an out-of-network doctor, and you can't go to this doctor, but you can go to Jones, but you can't go to Smith. They don't have that in Germany. You can go to any doctor, any chiropractor, any hospital in the whole country, and insurance has to pay you in 3 days. So this is just a better system. It could work here if we regulated our insurance companies as firmly as the German system does, but our insurance companies have a lot of clout in Congress, and they've always resisted that kind of regulation.
Let's take another phone call. Sharon, you're on line one.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like to just talk about, I am a parent of a 20-year-old type 1 diabetic since he was an infant. We're Alaskans. And the first patent of Humalog insulin that came out in the late, 1996, maybe, seven,
yeah,
somewhere in there. And we were living in Soldovia then, and in Homer, it was $25 for a 10 ml jar. It's now in the Anchorage area, over Alaska, $175 to $205 for a 10 ml jar. He was in Nome last summer, and my 20-year-old, and he ran out of insulin, and he went to the Native Hospital with the only pharmacy there, and he bought it for $60 for the same jar. And it's like, you know, can't we make this equitable for United States citizens a little bit here? I mean, I just have been released from a job where I had insurance, but to put my kids on the insurance with the new Obama plan, it was $400 extra a piece out of my check twice a month. You know,
that's outrageous.
But hey, they can say we offered insurance for your young people. You're like, whoa, who can afford this? So I took that money and I've been trying to buy my kid in insulin and keep him going. It's taken him 8 months. He's just recently been allowed, because he's a white male over the age of 19. He's just now gotten on Medicaid recently.
Wow.
And, you know, that disparity of being a United States citizen, paying taxes, working, he's looking for work, you can't work when you're sick. He's lost 48 pounds in the last month and a half. Now,
so you lose your insurance because you don't have a job, and then you get sick and you can't get a job.
Right, and you look sick when you're type 1 diabetic. You're gnarly.
No,
you're not thinking right. And
this is terrible. And you know what? 10 mLs of that.
I like being an American right now.
In Britain or Germany, that 10 mLs of that drug would probably cost $20.
And it's from the same company. It's from the same pharmaceutical company, Eli Lilly.
In my book, I talk about this. The same pill made in the same factory costs 6 cents a pill in Britain and $1.20 in America. That's because over there the government buys all the pills and they negotiate. Your son finally got onto Medicaid, and that's interesting. So,
and he's feeling pretty degraded because he's a young Alaska guy who knows how to commercial fish. He's worked his life, and we're used to paying our way. And this is super degrading, you know.
Yeah, no, it's
incredibly degrading.
No, I agree with that. And also, Medicaid is not that good a program. It's just not as good as private insurance.
It's impressive.
It's just awful, I think, that we force people to fall back on these government programs because the private system just isn't taking care of them.
Yeah.
Your family situation is exactly the problem with American health care. And so far, we haven't been able to fix it. If we could just get your story out there so that your neighbors knew what you were going through, I think we would fix it. But I was telling Dr. Woodward this. I think the reason we don't fix it is because Americans don't know how cruel our system is to people like your son.
Well, I think they generally are too busy and overworked to care, and the political systems are so harsh that I've written letters over the years, and I used to be a community health aide and work for Native health corporations. And, you know, I really appreciate their system here in Alaska. I think they should, you know, consider copying more parts of it, because we're an oil-rich state. However, that's such a political issue. And a couple years ago, I unregistered to vote. I am so exhausted from trying to write letters and do the right thing as an American citizen and pay my taxes that I'm exhausted from the whole process. But, you know, I'm still, as a medical worker, supposed to, you know, advocate for my patients. And, you know, it's so... psychologically, it's so screwed up for me as a healthcare worker to do this for others, but I can't even do it for my own family.
Yeah, it's psychologically, it's exhausting. Please don't stop voting, because eventually we're going to fix that.
I unregistered. That was my last vote. I refuse to vote anymore.
Well, we need
your vote to fix this. Eventually we're going to fix this if more people realize how cruel and unfair our system is to people like your son. The only other thing I would suggest to you, and I'm sure you've tried this, is some of the drug companies have programs for unemployed people. You've applied to those, I bet, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a joke, too, because you have to have a doctor's prescription now. You never used to. You used to be able to buy insulin over the counter. Only Walmart has insulin available, but they don't have the short-acting or the Lantus long-acting. And And if you've been, it's a lot of change for insulin for different folks at this point in time. And, how much does it cost to really make insulin?
No, I'm totally with you. And
that's a problem. But if you, as a type 1 diabetic, need insulin, you're messed up.
Sharon, we're going to have to move on. I appreciate your problem. It very well, frames the whole issue. But we have a couple of callers, and we have several other issues to go with.
Oh, thanks for your time.
Yep, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Sharon. Thank you.
Yep. Before, we have a couple of callers coming in, but I'd like to take just a second to get to maybe talking about the rationale or the reason for your most recent documentary, U.S. Healthcare, The Good News. Maybe we could use a little of that at this point. There is some good information out there, and perhaps talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. What happened was, when I wrote that other book where I went around the world looking at other countries, I made a couple of movies about that book for PBS Frontline. And, went to Germany, went to Japan and Taiwan, saw really good health care at low cost. And I came home and people were seeing this movie and people said to me, you didn't have to go around the world to find good health care at reasonable cost. And I said, oh, yeah, it doesn't exist in America. It turns out I was wrong. It turns out there are communities here and there all over the United States where doctors and hospitals are providing high quality care at way below the national average costs. And so we made this movie, U.S. Healthcare, The Good News. I think it's showing on Alaska PBS this week. And I'll be talking about it in Juneau this week, where we go to these places and try to figure out how American doctors and American hospitals can provide good healthcare at much less, like one-third the cost of other counties. And I'd say the most important thing we found is we found doctors all over America who are trying to reduce the cost of health care. This is so contrary to my view. I thought doctors were guys who were, going out to buy the next Lexus to drive to their, island vacation or something. But as a matter of fact, there are doctors and hospitals who feel they have an obligation to their community to get costs down. And I think the message of our film is every community in America could be as efficient as the places we saw in this movie, but they're not. Some places charge three times as much per patient for the same ailment as the places we went to in our film.
These include, I guess we should go ahead and mention Grand Junction, Colorado, which was the first one, and then a group health organization in Seattle.
Yeah, it's a great outfit, really good outfit. Then we went up to Everett, Washington, and saw some very good health care there. We saw good health care in New Hampshire. And incidentally, there are other places. The Mayo Clinic is probably the most famous hospital in America. It's quite low cost. Its costs are way below the national average, and that's because they have a boss there and they have doctors there who said, come on, let's find ways to cut costs. And if doctors try to do this, turns out they can do it.
Remind our listeners that if you're interested in seeing the program U.S. Healthcare, The Good News, you can go to a direct link that is on our website at alaskapublic.org. Go to line one. There is a link on our program notes today, as well as a link to T.R. Reid's homepage for more information about his books and documentaries as well. Let's go ahead and take a phone call again. Diane, you're on line one.
Hello.
Hello, Diane.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
First of all, I'd like to ask, how is our guest shoulder?
How nice of you. Yeah, when I wrote this book, I hurt my shoulder in the U.S. Navy. And since I was going to see doctors around the world, I figured I'd take my shoulder with me. Why not? And I asked doctors all over the world, what would you do for my shoulder? It's nice of you to ask, and here's the answer. It's better, I have more movement, I have less pain, and I did not put in the titanium shoulder. I still have my original shoulder, but it's working better.
And I bought your book after hearing about it on public radio, and I have loaned it to friends and professional people, and I tell them that you got most relief from India with a system that we probably would say is akin to voodoo. But anyway, I'm glad you're better.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Anyway, I love that book.
Good, thank you.
My question or comment is has to do with the care of the elderly who are on Medicare, and how poorly, and I can see that there's a whole lot of ways to save money, because my mother is 90, and I just got a hold of her records, and I was just appalled at what I read. Not only is she varies in height, and depending on who she sees, from several inches, but no one ever asked about maybe some of her ailments being due to medications. And they never ask how much socialization she has. She has dementia, they say. Or who goes out and plays checkers with her? Does she get someone to walk her around the block? And so many of the things that are wrong with us old folks can be addressed by better socialization, better management of what we do have, by really in-depth questions. And I'm not sure medical students are really trained. They're young. Why would they bother to ask about simple things like socialization or how many calories a day is someone eating or drinking? And and my mother doesn't even drink 8 ounces a day or eat more than a couple hundred calories. Of course she's got problems, and she never gets out. And there's no reason to get out of bed in the morning. And so many of the problems could be fixed by just better socialization and care, and no one asks.
Yeah, that's disturbing, because particularly somebody doing gerontology, somebody treating older people, should ask those kind of questions. They ought to know. Now, I will say this, although a lot of people don't like it, under the Affordable Care Act, the bill that's called Obamacare, there are going to be some standards for what doctors ought to do when a patient such as your mom comes in. And some people don't like that. They don't want government setting standards for what doctors are supposed to do. But I think that would make your mom's situation a little better if there were some standards and people were trained in them. And you're right, the med school should be teaching this stuff.
Yes, and it is kind of frightening, because it can go in the opposite direction, and maybe someone who is not really versed on something or not versed on some of the up-and-coming treatments can really keep us from perhaps progressing in the treatment of the elderly, but there definitely could be a lot of savings that I see. And thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Diane. Thank you for reading my book.
TR, here's an email. It says, your documentary shows many different ways healthcare can be approached and are able to model obvious improvements in care. Each of these care models represented an individualized approach in healthcare based on the needs of a community. Given the diversity of our national population, do you think it's possible for the federal government to approach healthcare reform in the same intimate way? If so, how do you see implementing universal care standards while recognizing the unique demographic need of a community?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, and my answer is yes. Yes, a country with a diverse population can have universal coverage of high quality. I saw it in many, many countries around the world. This definitely can be done. There's always got to be a trade-off between central standards and kind of local responses to issues. But we have resisted any kind of standards in American healthcare. That's what our movie shows. There are such huge differences in treatment of the same problem with a similar kind of patient because we haven't standardized, and many countries have. Many countries have a board or an organization or an arm of the health ministry who says, okay, this is what we recommend or insist on for treating this kind of ailment. And I don't think that has much to do with population diversity. It can apply to people of all sorts of ages, races, nationalities. I think good care can be established. It's one of the striking things to me watching making that movie was how little standardization there is. The doctors come out of medical school and really don't know how much care is the right amount of care for a given ailment. Nobody has told them that, I guess.
Louise, you're on line one.
Hi. I lived in a Scandinavian country for about 10 years and participated fully in the economic life. I paid a tax that went to cover my health care, and I was extremely satisfied with it. When I came back to the States, I'm a bit of a number nerd, so I did what I'd call a whole life market basket comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was looking for something that would compare to the Scandinavian healthcare tax, of course, I came up with the insurance payment that gets sucked out of my paycheck every week, or every 2 weeks. And it kind of hit me in the back of the head. My God, what this thing is a private tax. I am paying a tax to a private organization, private profit-making organization, to provide a service that elsewhere is considered a human right. And I have been deeply, deeply offended by the healthcare industry ever since. I wish that I dared to resign from this private tax system, and in fact what I carry right now is get hit by a truck insurance. Haven't been to the doctor for 5 years because I don't think I could afford what would be done to me if they found anything. I'd almost rather be dead than that poor. But
this is what you just said is a real problem with our system. People avoid going to the doctor. They avoid getting a physical because they don't know what would be found because they can't afford the treatment. This is not good for national health statistics. It's not good for individuals. So I think your
concept of a private tax.
Yeah, you're absolutely. I totally agree. So Americans always say, "Oh God, I'd hate to live in Norway. They have a 25% sales tax, 60% in income tax." But as a matter of fact, if anybody does what you just did, if you compare what that Norwegian pays every month, where he's not paying any health insurance and not paying any deductible, he pays less for health care, even with those high taxes, than an American does. And, you're right. We've shuffled it off and called it an insurance premium, but it works like a tax. It comes out of your paycheck. And it is, yeah. And plus, the American insurance companies are pretty inefficient compared to other countries. That Norwegian system has administrative costs of about 5%. They spend 95% of the money they take in to pay doctor bills. In American health insurance, the administrative cost is 20 to 30%. They only pay 70% of each dollar to actually pay doctor bills. So you're not only being taxed, you're being taxed by an inefficient organization. So I think you're absolutely right. And if Americans would add in all they do pay, they would see, well, as I said, we pay twice as much on average as all the other countries for health care, and we get less.
Well, thanks for agreeing with me. I would love to get that term into the vernacular.
Yeah, the private tax. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Thanks for your call, Louise.
Yeah.
Well, we seem to have at least put out a point of view on the healthcare system, and let me ask you, changing the status quo has not been easy anywhere. Clinton couldn't do it. Obama has introduced a bill that so far has not been declared unconstitutional. What do we need to do?
Well, the thing about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is 404,000 words. It's so complicated. Members of Congress don't know what's in it. People don't know what's in it. And I'm going to talk about that in Anchorage. I guess it's Thursday. My speech is called the Obamacare in Plain English. And I think I can explain what's in that bill. And some parts of that bill are going to make our system better. To me, it's not good enough. It's not going to get us to universal coverage. It's not going to get the kind of cost control we need. So I'm going to argue Thursday that the critics are right about some things, and the defenders of Obamacare are right about some things. But the most important thing is nobody knows what's in that bill. For example, as I will explain Thursday, starting January 1st, 2014, most people in Alaska will be able to go on the web, choose from 5 to 8 different insurance companies for their family, and the insurance company has to cover you. And for most people, the federal government will help you pay the premium. Now, nobody knows that's in there, but I'll lay all this out when I give my speech.
Who are the best countries right now, and how are we measuring them for healthcare? Where would we want to be if we wanted to get the best healthcare?
For me, the most important thing is cover everybody. Mm-hmm. Make sure that there's nobody so poor or so unfortunate they like that 19-year-old with diabetes who can't get his drug. Cover everybody, and all the other rich democracies do that. In terms of life expectancy, in terms of recovery rates from major diseases, in terms of keeping newborn babies alive, even if they're sick, there are many countries doing better than we are. I'd say Britain, it really does a good job at low cost. Japan is a phenomenal country. They have the oldest population in the world and the healthiest. You think about it, those two shouldn't go together. Great health care, great recovery rates from major diseases. Germany, I think, is an admirable system, and the World Health Organization rated France as the number one health insurance health care system in the world, and I, of course, I went there for my book, and you know what? I think they may be right. That is a great health care system. Everybody's covered. Everybody's on the same electronic record, so there's no paper documentation. You go to your doctor, and she has a sign on the wall telling you how much it's going to cost before you walk in. No doctor in America could do that because there's so many different fees for the same service. And they have really good health results for relatively low spending. So France is also another good one. So any of those, Germany, Japan, Britain, France, Taiwan is a very good system, but it's only 30 million people. So all admirable. The most important thing, doctor, is set up a system to cover everybody. If you commit to do that, then you can design a sensible system that works, and we've just never made that commitment.
And we haven't really brought up the other issue, which is a real moral dilemma in this country, is that we're probably the only country where you can go bankrupt for medical issues, some of which you may have had nothing to do with, like getting hit by a drunk driver or developing cancer.
Yeah, it's a whole other topic. 800,000 medical bankruptcies a year in our country, zero in Britain, zero in Germany, zero in Japan. Other countries don't let this happen.
Thanks very much, T.R. Reid, for taking the time with us today. We appreciate
it. Doctor, thanks very much. I'm looking forward. You know, I live in Colorado. We've had really lousy snow this year, but I understand you've done pretty well on the snow front.
We have a tidbit of it up here.
Yeah. I can't wait to get up there and see. Okay.
Right. Have a good trip up.
Thanks, doctor. Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, T.R. Reid will be presenting the topic Affordable Health Care Act in plain English this Thursday, March 22nd at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium here in Anchorage. Call alaskapublic.org or call KSKA for reservations. It starts at 7 o'clock. If you want to continue the conversation today, you can join KSKA on Facebook. You can find the links on our website, alaskapublic.org. We'll be here next Monday, March 26th at 2 p.m., when my guest will be Anchorage physician Dr. Jack Hickel. We'll be discussing his work in South Sudan and the work of the Alaska-Sudan Medical Project. So why not tune into Health and learn more March 26th from 2 to 3 p.m., repeating the same evening at 7 on FM 91 KSKA. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor. Dave Waldron engineered today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.